Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense on this Friday, September 2nd, Labor Day weekend has made it here. And Dad Shirt Friday means nothing from now on to Luke. He's used them all up. His whole wardrobe is complete until, you know, sometime further down the road when, like all men in their late 50s, he will have a full closet of stuff like this to wear. But you played along as best you could. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I tried to contribute as best I could. I didn't want to do any repeats right away. And so, you know, maybe I'll work a repeat in. I think I still have the fish one in my office down the hall. So maybe I'll go. I could go grab it if you really need me to stand in solidarity.
No. This is, you know, it was never meant to, like, you know, it wasn't a requirement. It was just that it's casual Friday, yeah. But for dads and the shirts that they know best.
The nice thing about radio is it's pretty much always casual Friday around here.
Oh, it totally is. All the time. I mean, the adjustment I had to make from years and years of working in radio to then working that TV job for just about a decade was immense. Like I said, I at one point had about maybe close to 200 ties to go with a dozen suits that you had to rotate all through. And except for Marion and Barion, I haven't worn a suit much ever since, which is too bad because, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Ron Burgundy that would said, you know, I look good in a suit. By the way, I brought my Ron Burgundy, kind of a big deal mug just for today, you know. So the coffee's ready. We're good to go. Coming up this morning, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. We congratulate a right-wing conspiracy theorist in Racine for proving crime exists among criminals who commit crimes as a way of proving crime exists. Congratulations, buddy. We will talk to some of my colleagues in other states, the Keystone in Pennsylvania and the Gander in Michigan, because there are big elections there and we want to get a feel for some of the craziness that's going on there. Why should we have it all, right? And we'll even spend a few minutes with Minnesota, which is usually a hotbed of Minnesota nice, but one of their most popular conservative radio hosts had the Republican governor and lieutenant governor candidate on their show yesterday, live from the Minnesota State Fair in front of a big crowd, and tore them a new one over the way that they're campaigning. So we'll get into that as well. We will spend precious little time talking about the Milwaukee Brewers, who went to Arizona and laid an egg, lost 5-0. Brandon Woodruff had a not good outing, but neither did, you know, anybody who carried a bat and swung it. So probably going to leave it at that.
And Woody's a decent bat himself. So I'm always shocked a little bit when, you know, I don't know if I like the designated hitter aspect because of that, because Brandon Woodruff can hit a ball pretty well. And so the fact that he no longer bats ever as a pitcher with this new designated hitting rule, a little upsetting.
Look, he's a stellar pitcher. He's coming back from an injury. Maybe he just needs to, you know, but maybe he just needs to bat. Maybe that's, you know, you ever sometimes you pick the wrong specialty. You thought you were a quarterback, but you're actually a better wide receiver. You know, these things happen. Speaking of which, the Badgers open the season tomorrow down there at Camp Randall, right? Against Illinois State, I believe. I do not have the notes in front of me, but
I believe it's a home opener. I know that they're playing Illinois State. That is correct. Tomorrow.
Well, here's the thing. I clicked on, because I'm, you know, basically just mainlining Twitter at this point, and anything I clicked on that was Journal Sentinel related, like, you know, click here to find out how to watch the Badger game. Page doesn't open. Page eventually opens, but incomplete. You try to refresh it. It just gives you a blank screen. And then your browser says, you know, page is slow to load. Do you want to wait? And that's the case with all the stories. So there's news out there provided by the good people at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But their Gannett people from way back in the day created the worst news website network ever. So we'll do as best we can to tell you what kinds of things are in the news from other sources as well.
Yes, and the Badgers do play here at Camp Randall tomorrow, 6 p.m. kickoff. So it is here in Madison.
6 p.m. Nice. I've been to one Badger game about 3-4 years ago on one of the coldest, windiest days imaginable. And it was, I mean, it was still nice, but I mean, we'd left just after jump around, and where people did jump around just to stay warm. But I still have the mugs, the tumblers, the insulated tumblers from the man who saved my life and that of others. Yeah. It's kind of like the one that Luke is holding there, a little bit, a little different design, but I mean, we were just, there was a line for the concession stand that said hot chocolate, but that line was immense. And we come around the corner, and just then a vendor comes out of one of the back rooms with a full tray of these, you know, hot chocolate, like, yes. And I mean, what was it? I don't know, $5 or whatever it was. Don't hold me to that. But it was so great to have a hot beverage. And that tumbler has last, I had no idea that it was like a real thing that you could own. I was expecting a glorified, you know, styrofoam cup. So
no, I use mine all the time. That one I got that I just showed you is from a game, so I use mine consistently.
Well, now that I've shown that I'm a big deal based on this coffee mug, maybe I'll have to grab my Badger one just to show off and wish the team well. So we have a lot of headlines to go through, a couple of states to visit, and of course the President Biden speech from last night to dissect in its entirety. All that and more coming up on this Friday. We'll be back. You're up north. Well, it's a kind of a mixed bag of a weather forecast that we have for today. Scattered showers during the day are possible. Scattered thunderstorms are possible late afternoon into the evening. All of this as a front moves through, and it's not a well-defined one. So when we say scattered, you know, might get wet, might not. And frankly, there's a chance, they say at the National Weather Service, that, you know, one of them could even possibly be severe for a moment. So if you're planning any outdoor activities to start your Labor Day weekend, like Luke over here, keep an eye out. But then cooler but sunny on Saturday and Sunday with highs just in the mid 70s. And then it will start to warm up again after Labor Day, of course, back up into the 80s. So anybody that was planning one of those really warm summer weekends for Labor Day, shame on you. What were you thinking? So are you packed now? I was, by the way, don't let me forget, you've got your trip up north. Can we maybe call Kristen Lyerly and see if she actually sent the boys to school today, or if she forgot that today was the second day of school for them?
Remind me to check
because she was going to travel this weekend, but then had to remember that, you know, kids are still in school, and then you're traveling as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm mostly packed. I got everything ready, set to load up into the car. Fiance is getting her tires realigned this morning. So she's doing that and then throwing everything in the car. I plan on getting home this afternoon, and we are going to head up to Door County. So I got some clothes to pack, though. I decided to go to trivia last night, open air trivia, rather than, you know, finish up all the packing. So kind of past Luke is kicking current Luke. Present Luke, and yes. For a little bit.
Trust me, I'm familiar. I try to sketch out the show as far as guests and topics, and this is this blank sheet of paper is what it looked like about 15 minutes ago. You know, it's got a couple of things on it now, but not nearly enough, which is why we're going to have just a nice time talking about packing for Labor Day, especially since, I mean, you mentioned throwing things in at the last minute. I am just comfortable doing that now because I always liked to pack early, but you know what you then spend the rest of the time doing is going, what did I forget? What did I forget? And then you have to take it all out. Yes, I did put in socks, you know, then put it all back in. The best way to do it all is just do it all, you know, right away before you go. Probably not the best thing for anybody's domestic partner to have to deal with, but, you know, it's what you do. So Harry Waite is as a Wisconsin Elections Commission member Ann Jacobs put so perfectly on Twitter last night. Harry Waite is in the find out part of the old saying about doing something and then finding out, because The conspiracy theorist was charged by prosecutors with the State Department of Justice on Thursday with four felony counts, two of election fraud and two of identity theft, after he acknowledged, he didn't just acknowledge, he bragged about fraudulently requesting absentee ballots of people not named Harry Waite. And he got a couple of them. And then he said, this is proof that the system's broken. And prosecutors are saying, no, it's proof you broke the law, which would happen if anybody tried to use identity theft to get ballots that didn't belong to them. Let me correct that. It's two misdemeanor counts of election fraud, two felony counts of identity theft. And so he faces 13 years in prison if convicted on all four counts. And I will say this with acknowledging every bit of bias imaginable. But what's the point of a maximum sentence if not for something like this? If he doesn't get 13 years in prison, and I'm serious about this, 13 years in prison, then why do you have a maximum sentence that high? This is as much criming as crime gets when it comes to identity theft and voter fraud. Not an accidental thing, like the woman in Fond du Lac County, who District Attorney Eric Toney charged with felony voter fraud when she made an honest mistake putting an address on a registration form. That is not worthy of a felony charge. This is. Now, of course, Waite, who runs a right-wing activist website, you know, buying into all these election conspiracies in the Racine area, told the Associated Press that he wasn't surprised. He says, you got to expect to pay some costs sometimes when you're trying to work for the public good. You can't always stay in the safe zone. And he said that he would do it again if he got the chance, which only proves he's learned nothing.
What do you think the day of realization when reality snaps back in? Do you think it's going to be the judge pounding down the gavel and really putting him to that 13-year sentence? Or do you think it's going to take some of those years in behind jail, like in a jail cell, to be able to realize, man, I've been had?
I'd like to tell you that a light bulb's going to go off, but no, I think that if that were to happen, and by the way, it won't. He won't get 13 years. You know, we've got to send a message, blah, blah. He would spend the entire time comparing himself to Nelson Mandela, that he's a political prisoner. That's exactly what we would get. And that is the mindset that President Biden was trying to address last night in Philadelphia that we will get into later. But look, you can make all the claims you want. You can claim you're a political prisoner. You can claim you're being persecuted for your Christian faith, like Tim Michaels is, etc. But when you deal with the facts on the ground, the fact that, you know, in America, we're a democracy and that we're not a theocracy and things like that, then you can't be surprised when either voters reject you, as they did to Trump in Wisconsin versus Biden, as has been proven, or that you're being charged with identity theft and voter fraud. And it leads me to the side note about, again, when you're committing a crime and bragging about it, the one person you would hope would take somebody at their word, yep, you committed a crime, let's do something about it, would be your local sheriff. But as we've discussed previously, Racine County Sheriff Christopher Schmalling agreed with Harry Waite that this proves some kind of vulnerabilities in the system. And he praised him, complimented him, rather than doing his job of pursuing charges against somebody committing a crime right under your nose. And that's something that people should probably remember the next time that, you know, that particular sheriff is talking about, you know, law and order and things like that. But the encouragement to behave like this, of course, comes all the way back to November of 2020. And again, even prior to the election, when Trump and others were saying, if I lose, it must mean the system is rigged. I mean, they planted that seed early. False as it was, they planted that seed early. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss from the Racine area helped gin it up by bringing on Michael Gableman, the former Supreme Court justice, to quote unquote investigate the election. And he let Gableman roll, finding nothing, wasting $1 million of your tax money. finally firing him a couple of weeks ago when Gableman supported Voss's primary opponent, who wanted Wisconsin to decertify its 2020 election results. Again, something that's not a thing, not allowed. Can't do it. Wouldn't be right anyway, because there was no fraud to decertify. However, Gableman did get fired by Voss, and you would think a lot of folks would say, well, that's the end of that chapter. Why would you bring up that $1 million waste of money that found nothing? Why would you bring that up? Unless you're Ron Johnson, who this week apparently blasted Voss for firing Gableman, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, whose website I've finally been able to pull up here. But Johnson told a Fox Valley Business Group on Wednesday, in a story written by Molly Beck and Lawrence Andrea, that he didn't agree with the decision that Voss made following the Gableman firing, and that was to withdraw the subpoenas that Gableman had issued to the mayors of Madison and Green Bay, threatening to jail them if they did not cooperate with his Star Chamber secret investigation. Gableman, you know, had sought that, and Johnson said this week, quote, "I just can't tell you how much I disagree with Robin Voss canceling those subpoenas." He said to the Fox West Chamber of Commerce in Nina, according to a recording that was obtained by the Journal Sentinel. Johnson continued about Voss, "You just gave up. You conceded legislative oversight over an entity you created, and you're going to let that entity have a leader, that entity, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, just say, you know, give you the middle finger and say, we're not going to tell you what we did. We're not going to show you the records." Johnson continues, "So now those election records are required by law to be held for 22 months. Why? So you can go back and look at them. We were never able to look at them, so now they'll be destroyed. I'm not happy with that, but we're going to be watching," Johnson says. "We're going to be trying to prevent fraud. Our goal ought to be to restore confidence in our election system, which we don't have right now." All that word salad really means is that Johnson's going to continue doing what he's been doing, which is blatantly lying about the 2020 election, sowing seeds of doubt, even as at the same time, he is, he's got a new, what was that, Luke? Was it an ad or was it just a video where he's criticizing Mandela Barnes for his security costs, and he rides up in a luxury SUV on a golf course and criticizes, you know, Mandela Barnes for having a security detail.
I don't think it was a political ad. I think it was just something he put out. It was the same vibe. Like, all I could imagine the only thing that I could visualize while I was watching it was the Mehmet Oz, the Dr. Oz clip in the grocery store with the crudité, because it just had that same vibe where he's like trying to appeal to the average Joe, like you said yesterday, and he's like getting out of a luxury car, which isn't the vehicle that he typically takes around to campaign events. I don't know if I've seen him get into his Toyota Venza, which is like kind of the minivan style car, and that's typically what he drives. And so he's getting out of this like luxury SUV, and it's not really the car that he's typically seen in here in Wisconsin. And he's like, "I'm just like you," and it was just a really weird clip all around.
And what did you see? You know, as we've talked about before, the thing that Johnson's trying to do here is flood the zone. And it's something we've said about Republicans for several cycles now is, again, when you don't have something to actually propose, when you don't actually stand for something, when all you can do is tear down, that's what you do, is you throw as much garbage out there as possible and hope that it fools enough people enough of the time. So back to what he said in Nina, Johnson continues to question the security of state elections, again, even though they are secure. He said he has an 80-person election integrity group that reviews voter registrations in Wisconsin. That was not Johnson. That was somebody else that was quoted in the story that I'm going to bring back, somebody with the last name of Henning. But Johnson, leading into it, said he still questions the integrity of Wisconsin elections. And again, it's worth noting that Johnson last year visited the state capitol and met with legislative leaders about dismantling the Wisconsin Elections Commission, something that Voss said he did not support at the time. But Johnson said Wednesday, "There's no way you can take a look at what happened in Wisconsin or nationally and say, oh, perfectly secure and safe elections. actually, Senator Johnson, that's exactly what we can say. Perfectly secure and safe elections. And there has been nothing to contradict that. Instead, there's only been evidence that you were willing to be a mule with a fraudulent electoral ballot to bring to the vice president on January 6th. We'll have more after this break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Happy Friday. It's Labor Day weekend. Hope that you get a nice, long, and relaxing one, which cannot be said for a lot of journalists in Wisconsin, unfortunately, because President Biden is going to be coming to Milwaukee's Labor Fest on Monday. So for some of us, though, there will be at least a half a day, if not a full day of work. But you know, that's the nature of the job. It also means that on one of these upcoming Fridays, you're not going to see me. We're just going to... That's what's called a comp day, boys and girls.
There you go. You roll that one over. And if you want special live coverage, if you're not a reporter, but you would like to tune in and hear what's going on at Labor Fest on Monday, Civic Media is going to be broadcasting live from the festival grounds, noon to 3 p.m. There's hopes to get President Biden on the show for Earl Ingram and Mike Cruder going to be hosting it from the Labor Fest grounds. And so you're going to definitely want to tune in. You can listen on Bull Falls Radio on WXCO 1230 AM, 98.9 FM. But you can also listen around the state, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Devil Radio in Madison, and the Shaw 101 FM in Waukesha.
All right. So we have a quandary in covering some of these campaigns, you know, whether it's Biden making speeches, you know, ahead of the midterms or the Senate race or the governor's race. And the discussion went something like this. We have a lot of coverage about Senator Ron Johnson, and not nearly as much about Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And there is a clear reason for why that is. And it's strategic in part and really not strategic on the other part. The strategic part is on the part of Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who is sticking with a message of being extremely relatable and in tune with what working families are talking about. It's fairly narrow in that he's not going out of his way to launch a lot of criticisms, but he's also not putting out a lot of, you know, material that says, hey, let's debate this proposal or this proposal. He instead is saying, look, make me a Democrat replacing Ron Johnson, and a lot of the proposals we've talked about the past 2 years can pass. The flip side of that is Governor Tony Evers, who actually has been proposing a lot of things, most recently a plan to deal with the state budget surplus as a way to show people again in, you know, Wisconsin voters that here are the ideas that I have that I'm proposing, and Republican legislators are just opposing it, just sitting on a $5 billion surplus of your money. But getting back to Mandela Barnes, again, a very focused approach. That's very strategic. Then there's the non-strategic part, and that would be Ron Johnson, the man. Not the campaign, the man who can't help himself. And so when we talked about our coverage and said, why are there so many Ron Johnson stories compared to Mandela Barnes stories? It's very simple. Ron Johnson keeps talking. And that's it. And something else comes out. And you can't just let it go because it either is an outright falsehood, or it is distorted in some way that the record has to be corrected. And so that's why you see so much of that, because it's almost like he's going out of his way to not be relatable when you do things like embrace a plan that would put Social Security and Medicare up on the chopping block either every 5 years, according to one plan, or every 1 or 2 years, according to something that he mentioned himself just a couple of weeks back, that it should be treated, Social Security and Medicare, as discretionary spending, which makes it just subject to the whims of Congress. So, of course, you have to bring that up. And so you saw in our last segment, or heard in our last segment, I guess I should say, you heard us talking about what Ron Johnson said about election integrity and the falsehoods that he is continuing to perpetuate. And I thought we were going to be done talking about Ron Johnson for today. But as I mentioned, the Journal Sentinel website is finally working. And here's something else that Ron Johnson said that I hadn't heard about until this morning. Speaking to an audience gathered for the American Legion National Convention at the Wisconsin Center in Milwaukee, Republican Senator Ron Johnson on Tuesday defended his record, claims he's been falsely accused of wanting to put Social Security, Medicare, and veteran benefits on the chopping block. But here's the part that caught me. He warns of a, quote, fundamental transformation of America when talking to the American Legion. I'm sorry. Look, if you have a hearing range that you're hearing dog whistles, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I'm sure your ears are ringing right now. And we'll get to that. But first on the budget. Johnson said he doesn't want to cut Social Security. He wants to save it. And again, he says it's scaremongering. But again, the record is there. He has said what he has said. He also defended voting no before he voted yes on the bill that would expand health care availability to veterans who were exposed to burn pits overseas. Again, saying that he was just making a vote against the spending and then voting for the bill. That's not what the vote was. And Ron Johnson and others are counting on people to just take him at face value when he says that. He was not voting no on the spending in the bill. He was voting no to kill the bill. The vote specifically was whether it could go to a final vote. And to vote no is essentially what the filibuster is. It's to say, nope, we're not going to send it to a final vote yet. We are going to talk this to death. That was the vote. The vote was to kill the bill, not to kill the spending. Anyway, now we get to the part in the speech where Johnson warned of the dangers of what he termed open borders and inflation, and then blamed Democratic presidents who he said were seeking to transform the country. So Johnson said, as he goes around Wisconsin, he talks with people who are, quote, struggling with the burden, the fundamental transformation of America, which is really fundamentally destroying this country. Johnson, it says here, let me give proper credit, Bill Glauber of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And by the way, I'm going to say again, if you're not paying to subscribe to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, please fix that. I know their website's awful. Their reporters are not. And you really don't just depend on me to tell you what these people are saying and on Twitter. But by the way, follow them on Twitter too. They're all brilliant. But anyway, I continue. Johnson talked about a talk that was given at a recent Senate lunch. Johnson didn't name the speaker, but an aide said he was referring to a Canadian clinical psychologist, Jordan Peterson. He made the point, Johnson says, that as conservatives, we do a terrible job of defending our values. I wouldn't say that, Johnson continues. And he said that that's because we never thought we'd have to defend the benefit of having a mom and a dad and a nuclear family. We never thought we'd have to push back on school administrators injecting our children with gender-blocking drugs without telling the parents. We never thought that biological males should be competing with our girls and then expecting to shower in their locker rooms. We never thought we'd have to defend the basic values of this country. There is an acronym, and I can only share the acronym that would be my best response to this. And the letters go RUFKM. And when you see that on Twitter, you know what it's for or anyplace else, but I can't go on from there. But are you kidding me? Are you really kidding me that he just said school administrators are injecting children with gender-blocking drugs and that biological males are allowed to shower in girls' locker rooms, as if that's something that happens at will? The man has seen the movie Porky's one too many times if he thinks that it's just all about going into whichever shower you want in the gym. But again, when you don't have basic meat and potatoes issues to bring to families, you got to scare them.
Can I share even one more kind of insane out there thing that he said this week alone, since we're kind of in the beat up on Ron Johnson for the crazy things that he's saying?
Well, again, it's not beat up. It's, well, he keeps talking, yes, and we're not going to let it go.
Well, right. So, you should be pointing it out. Continue. Yes, my bad. Not beating up, but pointing out and talking about the crazy things that he's saying rather than just letting him get away with these crazy things. This was during a Teletown Hall, I believe 2 nights ago now. And this is what Senator, and I got some audio for you from the Teletown Hall. This is what Senator Ron Johnson said about addressing the workforce shortages that the state and country are facing right now.
I wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal. You can go online, November 2021, saying that we need about 2.6 million additional workers added to our labor force. And our birth rates aren't producing that. So there are a number of innovative ideas I would support. Former Senator Phil Graham came to the Senate. We were talking about our labor shortage, and one of his suggestions was to coax seniors that could re-enter the workforce. Don't charge them payroll tax. They're not paying it anyway, so they want to get back and earn a few extra bucks. Let them start working and don't charge them payroll tax.
That was Wednesday night in a Teletown Hall. That was captured by WCPT radio out of Chicago. You'll find them on Twitter under Heartland Signal. Mm-hmm. And let people know that, again, that's your senator. His answer to a workforce shortage isn't about, say, immigration reform, when we need legal immigration more than ever, as the demographics of the baby boom, show us in their stark reality. It isn't about improving the conditions so that more people can advance into other jobs. It's coaxing old people out of retirement with what he calls a few extra bucks. I mean, the man can't help but come off as Uncle Pennybags, the guy in the Monopoly with the tux on. Uncle Pennybags.
It's like, what is it, retirement?
We'll just throw a few bucks.
Yeah, it's like, what is it? Retirement? You could just go back into the workforce for a couple of years. Who needs to enjoy retirement? I mean, the man went back on his campaign pledge to only serve 2 terms as senator. And so it only, I guess, is fitting that he just doesn't believe other Americans should go into retirement either. They should come out of retirement and address the workforce shortage. Because he's doing his part. He's going against that campaign pledge to only serve 2 terms.
Yeah, I mean, we did a story at Up North News this week about somebody who retired and then unretired, but in unretiring, he came back on better terms with his employer, to have the job be a little less grueling. There's nothing wrong with that. Whereas Johnson wants to unretire in a way that is perhaps even more grueling for those of us who have to take in just these 3 examples today and explain them. Look, Mandela Barnes has an open invitation. He can come sit with us and he can propose things all day long and talk about himself and his connection to families. We would love that. The reason you hear about Ron Johnson so much is he keeps saying this stuff, and this stuff deserves a response before too many people take things at face value. The economy, the new jobs report came in this morning. And the economy added 315,000 more jobs in August, pretty much in line with expectations. The unemployment rate ticked up to a still amazingly low 3.7%. And the reason it ticked up is more people did re-enter the labor force. They either unretired or they left a crappy job and they have now found a better job. So basically, it's probably the best news possible for Democrats who are running for office, because the concern was, well, the economy is recovering too quickly, and so inflation is shooting up. Okay, so people are unhappy about the inflation. Well, let's do things that bring inflation down, but it's going to mean that some places may, lay off people or not hire as much. Well, then that's got people saying, oh my gosh, no, now we're shedding jobs. It's like you can always find, the cloud behind any silver lining when you're talking about economic policy. And this seems to have split the difference in that job growth is still strong, that people are, in fact, re-entering the labor force. but they don't have to do it by putting their Social Security up for a vote every year and then maybe throwing them a few bucks to coax them back into the workforce, as Ron Johnson likes to put it. We'll take a break and see if we can find somebody or something else to talk about. Please, right after this break. You're Up North. That doesn't get you ready to kick off the Badger football season. I don't know what will. You know, it's just, you just don't know how a tradition is going to start. You know, there's things that you try to make happen, hashtag Dad Shirt Friday, you know, that don't necessarily catch on. And then you have jumping around a house of pain, you know, after the third quarter, which I'm sure was just a fun thing to do once or twice. But now I don't remember. We actually have it in our newsletter yesterday, what year it started. Do you know off the top of your head, Luke?
I believe it's just the longest consecutive running tradition, so I don't know what year it started, though.
House of Pain. Here it is. 1998.
Okay.
It was, and this is from our reporter, Christina Lurie, in her uplifting segment of our newsletter. Since 1998, it was first used in a game against Purdue, and their quarterback at the time, Drew Brees. So there you have that. She notes here that it was famously and angrily skipped during Camp Randall renovations in 2003. Although I would add parenthetically, thank God for the renovations to make sure that, you know, a stadium doesn't fall down or something.
They had to reinforce it so that jump around could take place.
Yes. Yeah. And apparently, I did not know this or forgot about it, but was actually performed live with House of Pain at the Rose Bowl in 2011. I do not remember that, but
that was the year before I went then.
Okay.
January of 2011 or?
I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been January of 2011 then, because it's always a January bowl. I went in January of 2013 then. I went the third out of the three consecutive appearances that the Badgers went, and unfortunately I lost.
I was talking about the Rose Bowl in, I want to say, January of 2000, yesterday. It's one of those TV stories. It's time for Grandpa to tell a story. Covering the Rose Bowl, and I think I may have told it here once before, but again, I'm a grandpa. This is what I do. I tell stories over and over again. Last night, while out to dinner, I bumped into my old longtime co-anchor, Judy Clark. You know, Judy and I co-anchored the news at Channel 13 for many years, and then I had a midlife crisis and went into politics, and Judy is still there after 30-plus years. And so she and her husband and one of her adult sons were there, and we had a wonderful conversation, and then another former colleague joined us who was playing golf nearby. And so we started doing what we do best, and that was telling all the old stories about the TV station, several of which you're never going to hear on this radio show for varied reasons, though I really want to share them. But I did bring up the old Rose Bowl story because it was, I forget what prompted it, but whatever prompted it was telling the story. That was the one where Terrell Owens was with the 49ers at the time, and he caught the game-winning pass on the goal line in the Packer game that followed the next day. And that's what really where the story came from. We were covering the Rose Bowl the day before in Pasadena. We had to take a red eye up to San Francisco and cover the 49ers Packers playoff game. And my job was to just hold on to the microphone while Bob Gallagher had the camera. And that as soon as the game was over, we were supposed to run to the center of the field, you know, for the post-game handshake and any comments. I did this very admirably the day before or 2 days before at the Rose Bowl, you know, and it was great. It was a beautiful day. We did several stories. Game was over, ran to the middle of the field, worked out great. But that day or two later, when Terrell Owens caught that pass, and we were at the goal line, and Bob's shooting it, I'm holding the microphone, and I am stunned like every other Packer fan that we had just lost that game. It looked like we had it in hand. We lost, and I'm just standing there, and suddenly I am yanked like I'm in a cartoon because Bob had started running toward the middle of the field. My microphone, of course, is still attached to the camera. And so off I go. I probably landed somewhere around the 15-yard line before I got my feet again. And we eventually made it to the middle of the field for what was a very, very shocking moment.
Yeah. So I didn't get to do anything on field for the Rose Bowl, but one of my grandfather passed away a few years ago. And when my mom was taking care of his things, and I'm one of 22 grandchildren on my mom's side. And there was a 1994 Rose Bowl sweatshirt that she was packing up, and she was sending us photos of all these things. And she kind of sent a photo of a bunch of different sweatshirts and old previously worn clothes by my grandfather. And she was like, and I have two brothers, and it was to all three of us. And she was like, do any of you want any of this? Like, is there anything here that you'd like to claim? And immediately saw the sweatshirt. And I was like, yes, I want that. I was born in 1994. My older brother, though, got to go to that game with my grandfather. He and one of my cousins and my aunt and uncle were at that game in 94. And so I immediately thought I was going to have to fight him for it because he was there for it. And apparently my dad had the sweatshirt for a little while because it fit him better. So there was a number of years where it was actually in the house, but it got returned to my grandpa. And it is one of my favorite Badger sweatshirts to wear now on game days because it's the old vintage 1994 crew neck. The Badgers won in the Rose Bowl, and it was the year I was born, and is one of my favorite keepsakes. And when I wear it, I know that I'm watching the Badgers with my grandpa. So it's a very great keepsake. And those are the things I think of when I hear Jump Around and the Badgers are starting. It's a family tradition. Me and both my brothers are all Badgers, and it's going to be very exciting to watch this season. And it's a good time.
You know, and that's the thing about we're very fortunate that we have, you know, the Badgers here, as well as Marquette, as well as some other, you know, really great state schools. Obviously, as a proud alum of UW-Eau Claire, but UWGB and such, and that you can build little family traditions around these things. And so it's not, when we talk about Jump Around and people think about, you know, a bunch of drunken college students or really cold middle-aged people getting hot cocoa, you know, in the stands. There's more to it than that. There's things that bring families together, which is awesome. New from WISP Politics and from TMJ4 in Milwaukee, a coalition that includes WTMJ, Marquette University and WISP Politics, has announced plans for debates in both the Senate and gubernatorial races next month. The Senate debate between Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes will be held October 13th at Marquette. And the governor's debate between Tim Michaels and Governor Tony Evers will follow 1 week later on October 20th. Both debates will be moderated by TMJ's Charles Benson and Shannon Sims. Let's see, the debates are also sponsored by TMJ Radio and the Milwaukee Business Journal. They'll be broadcast on TMJ TV as well as statewide on local affiliates. I don't know exactly in front of me which ones those will turn out to be, but most definitely will be a statewide thing. And so mark your calendars for October 14th and 21st, the days after that, because there's a pretty good chance we're going to end up doing a whole lot of fact checking on those Fridays after those Thursday debates. We are going to take a break here, and we go in our next hour. Later in our next hour, we talk to one of my colleagues in Pennsylvania about Senate and gubernatorial races there. And then in our 10 o'clock hour, the same thing about the governor's race in Michigan. Crazy days, folks. We're going to get updates to find out we are not alone. We'll be back. You're up north.